Hello, everyone. This is Dark Journalist with a very special interview for you with former Assistant HUD Secretary, Dylan Reed partner, and publisher of the Solari Report, Catherine Austin Fitz. Catherine tells us that the time is now to see the invisible war being waged with surveillance, central bank digital currency, digital passports, and the global control grid. Can humanity awaken in time to stop the new slavery system that's being installed? Let's go ask former Assistant HUD Secretary, Catherine Austin Fitz.
The kind of things that you're doing are more in demand now than ever, I would say. Do you feel that you're more in demand now than ever?
I feel that what I'm saying is now, you know, I've always tended, you can tell by looking at the wrap-ups, I'm always focusing on the basics. Mm-hmm. And the basic primary trends that are inescapable, inavoidable. We have to deal with them. They're at the heart of the matter.
Right.
And you know, that's not always the most interesting or entertaining stuff. However, now it's getting much more interesting because, you know, when you can't afford the food, energy, and shelter you need, you know, the fact that $21 trillion is disappearing becomes more interesting.
Yes, right. Absolutely.
So, right.
It's almost like the wave of the information was ahead of its time, and now the time catches up with it.
Well, it wasn't ahead of its time for financial people, because remember, financial people need to know where the ship is going. So anybody who's in a business where they needed to know the real risk, the long-term primary trends, you know, they're fine because that's what they're focused on. But
they have blind spots.
We all have blind spots. We all have. I mean, here's the big blind spot, and you know, if you go to most programs that deal with current events, you're going to listen to a group of people talking about the world, starting with Minnie and Mickey. So you ask, what is the United States doing about that? And they start out with what Minnie and Mickey have said and what Minnie and Mickey are doing. You know, and that's a very exhaustive way to begin a representation of reality, because Minnie and Mickey are just a contrived invention. You know, they're just the show upstairs.
Right.
Right. So.
Yeah. And a lot of that coming up with the midterms and all the rest, there's so much of this, and this is what you have to sift through when you're trying to look for anything real, you know, but it's a much bigger
story. Look at the content you're discussing on Dark Journalist. Okay.
Yes.
How does it relate to what's in the news? That's Minnie and Mickey, right?
It's like two different worlds. It is.
It's two different worlds. Right. It's like two different worlds. And the reality is, you know, when they build the underground bases, that makes the mining stocks go up. Right.
Yes. Right. Exactly.
So I want to integrate both worlds anyway. So
I like it. I like it. Yes. 100%. I wrote down after going through the reports and after going through some of the things that you were prioritizing and thinking about talking about, I wrote down the phrase, where are we now?
We're up the creek without a paddle.
Really?
That's where we are. Yeah, that's where we are.
Tell me why.
Because you have an establishment, and I'm just speaking for the United States now, which has engineered from 1998 on a coup d'etat. Mm-hmm. And to finance that coup d'etat, they've stuffed our pension funds and retirements with IOUs from the government, from which the money is all disappearing.
Right.
So the liabilities are there. The assets have been disappeared. You know, not all of them, but much of them. And the IOUs of our, you know, the taxpayers as retirees have a pension fund full of IOUs from themselves. Right.
Amazing. Yes.
Right. And so now the question is, now that everybody wants to retire. Remember when I told you they took the money for space instead of nursing homes, right? So now that everybody wants to retire, the issue is coming up. And of course, we saw with the going direct reset, massive inflation, you know, monetary inflation, and now it's showing up at the pump. It's showing up at the grocery store. Now, what's showing up at the grocery store is a lot of disaster capitalism too, as you know.
Yes.
So, right.
The New York Times came out with a story today, highest inflation in 40 years, 8.3 and rising, not even trying to couch the language. So that is the nature of that reality on the ground that you're talking about. That's been building in the background. You've been telling people this thing is happening. And then now,
well, if you look at the Chapwood Index, the real cost of goods have been rising at 8 to 14% for the last 10 years.
Right.
Right. So
it's already been there.
Yeah.
So. And yet seeing it and responding to it when it's public is kind of a different thing, isn't it?
No, because when it's in the New York Times, I look at it and think, well, maybe it's not really 8%, you know.
But when I look at that, what I'm starting to see is it's almost like I feel like this administration was built for the deconstruction. They want the economic collapse on the front. And this is an interesting thing because with your work and the things that you've done over the years, you've never been the like, oh, the economy is going to collapse and all these types of things. You've talked about them slow burning it out.
Well, the economy is not collapsed. Okay. You have a portion of the economy which is being liquidated and sucked over to a different part of the economy. And then you have another part of the economy that's growing. Mm-hmm. Okay. So our first quarter wrap ups we did on SPACs.
Right.
You know, in 3 years, a couple hundred billion dollars poured into SPACs. It was boomtown. Right. Mm-hmm. Now, a million small businesses got shut down, but that's a reallocation of capital. You shut down a million businesses using COVID, and then you print money and pour it into, you know, the financing of electric car companies, space companies, tech companies, biotech companies. That's a reallocation. So we're watching a reallocation. Part of the challenge with a reallocation is that you have a wide group of people who can no longer be productive under those circumstances. So in the last quarter, productivity fell 7.5%. No society can, you know, this is not an economic problem, Daniel. This is a, when a society, when the rule of law breaks down, nothing can work. And you can print all the money and inject all the steroids you want. But if you're poisoning the population and destroying their productivity, nothing's going to work.
Right.
But it's intentional.
Yes.
Here's the thing to understand about the people who lead America. If, you know, they kind of set plans and goals and then they try stuff and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but they evolve it. You know, so they want to go in a certain direction and they start and they evolve and, you know, it's trial and error and it's very organic, you know, but they go there. And if suddenly the system veers and goes in a place they don't want to go, they then fix it and turn it back. So the thing to understand about where the system's going, if it's going there and for 20 years they say, oh, we don't want to go there, but it's complicated and it's a mistake. It's not a mistake.
Right.
You know, it's going where they want it to go. I mean, sit back and imagine, you know, look at the whole world and realize everything is perfect. It's completely optimized. I mean, that's a gross oversimplification, but do you know what I mean? It's working. That's what you have to understand. It's working. And a decision has been made to basically take the economy and centralize control using AI and software and, you know, a variety of different technologies. And, you know, it's like a high-tech Bolshevik revolution.
Right. Yes. And since you mentioned the Bolsheviks, the Ukraine war part of this, it seems like they're playing an old card with that one.
I'd love to know where that $40 billion is going. It's like, okay, we can't do bailouts. They won't believe us. Let's try a war.
Yeah.
You know, so the question is, where's that money going? I don't know.
taking high chances on nuclear exchanges as well. I've noticed that very casually talked about in the press.
Well, but if you look at the long sweep of history, a decision was made in 1996 to rebalance the global economy, and that continues. And yes, it's if you just keep rebalancing, by definition, you're going to have to implode, adjust, reconfigure the international institution and relationships. So China's growing because we invested in China. Russia's growing because up until a certain point, we invested in Russia. And and you have a debate about three models that are going on, and they're going on in every country in the world. The first model is, will that country be sovereign or not? Will they lose their sovereignty? The second is, whoever is running in that country, is it going to be run by government or corporations and banks? So Russia is choosing government. The United States is choosing banks and corporations. Okay. And then the third is individual sovereignty going to be lost to central control? So you could argue China and Russia are fully on board for complete control of the individual and wiping out individual sovereignty, as long as it's the national players who control it, as opposed to the Anglo-American alliance. So the Chinese want to run their own social credit system. They don't want it run by the Anglo-American alliance and the G7 central banks, right?
Right.
So you have these three models that are being fought out. One is, you know, compromise of individual sovereignty using digital technology. One is, you know, national sovereignty. And the third is, you know, who's going to be the operational, you know, who's going to operate it day to day? Is it going to be governments or is it going to be corporations and banks, which will be dominant?
Right.
So, you know, it's funny because there are a lot of people who say, oh, well, you know, Putin's a good guy. He's, you know, he's doing all these things to keep us free. And meantime, you know, they're running ahead with biometrics and central control and digital technology and the whole nine yards.
On the Sputnik vaccine.
Right, exactly. So it's like, what? Right, right.
There's a lot of that. So, there's a lot of that Putin heroics thing going on in the background around alternative medias heavily.
Well, it is true. I think that Putin is pushing for government, you know, a sovereign nation state run by a government as opposed to corporations and banks. Mm-hmm. So there are significant differences. There's no, in my mind, there's no way Putin could be doing what he's doing without support from the West.
So, interesting.
Yeah. So
what are they trying to do with him?
Well, if you really do want to rebalance the global economy, you know, then you're going to have the rise of Asia. So one of our wrap-ups that, you know, was really important for everybody to read was the rise of the Asian consumer.
Oh yeah.
And so remember, Europe is the largest consumer market in the world. Asia has become the manufacturing juggernaut. And the whole debate by Brzezinski in the global chessboard is the Anglo-American alliance can't let China and Europe build into each other and cut the Anglo-American alliance out. So, of course, they plopped themselves right down in the middle of, you know, Afghanistan and the Ukraine. And right, that's the middle of the Silk Road. But remember, China and a variety of parties are building railroads. So instead of 40 days by sea lane, which make the U.S. Navy the most powerful force in the world, you got roads and trains that can go in 11 days.
Wow.
That's a big, big change.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's funny, too, because they've been spending their money building things, and we're spending our money to give to Ukraine or drop bombs everywhere.
So one of the interviews I did in 2014 was a great interview with a guy named Steve Roche, who had been at Morgan Stanley and warned about the coming financial crisis. And I think to get him out of town, they moved him out to Asia and he became vice chairman of Morgan Stanley in Asia. And he wrote a book when he came back called Unbalanced, which is, as of 2014, a superb description of the relationship between America and China. And they're complete, you know, it's like two Siamese twins, you know, who are attached at the hip, but fight. it's a boxing match between two Siamese twins. What he describes is that the false prosperity of the West was built on you know, what happened by moving all the manufacturing to China and to Asia. Right. And that, you know, it's called, I would call it the China trade. The China trade kept the false prosperity going. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, built Walmart because everybody was going down and, you know, getting cheaper and cheaper TVs and cheaper this and that.
In the meantime, so, they're losing their jobs and eventually.
Well, you're destroying the muscle in the economy because what's happening is, you know, you're selling treasuries to China. Mm-hmm. You use that money to hand out food stamps and welfare payments. Those people go down to Walmart and buy stuff that was purchased, that was made in China. Wow. And meantime, as our manufacturing base is weakening, theirs is growing and they're getting stronger and stronger. And our skills are getting weaker and weaker and their skills are getting stronger and stronger. And our pollution is improving and we're shipping out all the environmental pollution to them. So right. That was part of the trade. And part of it was now we're getting rid of the unions because the unions have no bargaining clout because we're shipping all the manufacturing abroad. And of course, when you do that, when you move it from here to there, you know, let's say company, five people here in Ohio own the company here. But when you move it abroad, it's a new syndicate that ends up, you know, owning that equity. Right. So there are a lot of, you know, there are a lot of different plays going on at the same time. But
the idea that it's the CCP that's taking over America, for example, you see this floated around in certain circles. What do you think of something like that with a number of the moves that were taking place during the COVID op, for example?
So my favorite, I had a very intelligent, capable person years ago try to explain to me that it was the Chinese who were doing the spraying and we couldn't stop them. You know, so China's geoengineering over California and the U.S. military is helpless.
Yeah.
With a 750 billion a year budget is helpless to stop them. Okay. You know, when I hear those things, I never quite know what to say. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if you unpack the details behind it, it just doesn't fit with the reality that I've lived in. So, you know, now here's the question. If you look at what Mr. Global is trying to achieve, I think the reason Mr. Global invested and built up China is Mr. Global wants that industrial capacity, that engineering capacity.
Right.
And if you're going to build a multi-planetary civilization, and you look at what India plus Korea plus Japan plus China together can bring to that effort.
Yeah.
You need them.
Absolutely.
Right. And what's interesting, though, is why are you destroying the scientific and engineering capacity of America?
Yes. Right. It's a huge unanswered question just sitting in the middle of all that.
So, If you look at any measurement of what's happening to people physically or mentally in America, mm-hmm. the population is being destroyed.
Right.
As a productive labor force. And that's clearly
intentional. Do you think that's true globally or it's just true in America?
It's very hard to tell. You know, because you'd have to spend a lot of time in a country. If you look at how it's done in America, it's very subtle.
Okay.
And it's, you know, it's not 100% of the population that's targeted.
Mm-hmm.
So it's clearly, you know, it's clearly not everybody. But right. I would say it's a significant portion of the global population.
Yes.
So, you know, if you look at our wrap up for the our annual sovereignty wrap up that we publish in January. You know, every year we do scenario planning, and one of the scenarios, you know, you have in scenario planning, you end up with four quadrants, two variables, and mm-hmm. one of the variables was all-cause mortality. How much higher would it be this year than last year? And, you know, we see lots of predictions about what the impact will be of what I call the great poisoning, because it's much bigger than that. We just had Chris Axley on the Salary Report talking about aluminum. Some of that is an injection problem, but you know, aluminum comes in many forms, including the spraying. And if you look at what could happen in terms of skyrocketing mortality and disability, I don't know. I think we're in for a very rough ride. You know, one of my greatest frustrations is if you've ever, because of the litigation, I had to deep dive all the different covert operations, and you know, we rolled it up into that 12-part series, Deep State Tactics.
Fantastic.
So I had to deep dive all the tactics, because every time I was dealing in a situation, you know, and I get things working and going to the right, suddenly people start peeling off and disappearing or going crazy or saying the weirdest, you know, it's like bizarro land. And, you know, every time I had to unpack what was happening and why. And, you know, I'll never forget, I'm lying in bed in Philadelphia. I had an apartment in Philadelphia. And I had like a sleigh bed that went sort of, it was a small room, and there were big windows all around the end. So the whole wall was sort of windows. And it was like a little row house. And, you know, if you went down to the end of the bed and looked up, you could see the roof on the on the next house. There were only two or three story houses. And I'm lying there in bed, and it's like 11 o'clock at night. And suddenly, you know, the little red dot from an assassin's rifle starts rolling through the room and coming up, you know, to about my knees, because that's as far as you can go if you're on the roof. And it's just like going around the room. He's just like playing with me.
Unbelievable.
You know, if he wanted to shoot me, could have just shot me before I realized anybody was there.
Right.
But it's, you know, it's psychological war games. So I thought, you know, this is really strange. So at this point I had, you know, I'd found all these different websites of people who are targeted for various reasons, and they share stories. And I got up and I got online and I said, you know, has anybody ever dealt with a red dot? You know, I tell the story, and, you know, I found some guy in Phoenix who had that happen to him, and some other guy who, I think he was down in Israel, he'd had it happen to, you know, and you're it's like, okay, you know, yeah. Deep State Tactics, Chapter 8, you know, subsection 5, yeah. Footnote 3, the red dot, you know, op.
Unbelievable.
So anyway, so I had to unpack all of these things over many, many, many years, and thousands of different, you know, just thousands of different things where somebody's perfectly sane and fine and everything is working. And then suddenly they make no sense. They're incoherent. They're, you know, and, you know, I really dealt with an investment advisor because that's how they sell financial fraud.
Right.
You know, they use it to trick people into lousy investments. Anyway, so that's where I really got in the fight with him. But anyway, so I had to unpack all this stuff. And there's a lot of material available. If you go to Solari and put mind control in the search box, you'll pull up a commentary with all my favorite books and stories and links. And, you know, I just realized there's another one I have to put there. But anyway,
yeah,
so there's
fantastic.
A ton of, yeah, there's a ton of stuff. But at the bottom, there are a couple guys lecturing the military, and I think it won at West Point, on neurological weapons and how cool they are and how they work and what you can do.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
One thing answers the other there. One of those deep state tactics that you mentioned recently is this promotion of the mass formation psychosis.
Unbelievable. And I just emailed some guy who had that on his program.
Uh-huh.
And I said, you know, what are you doing? And he come back and he said, well, I thought it'd be good to unpack mass formation psychobabble. So that was his expression, not mine, but I thought that was good, psychobabble. So here's the thing. If you look, so as I describe this, I just want to make sure your listeners know, I did an interview with Ulrich Groniger called Control and Freedom Happen One Person at a Time.
Yeah.
And it's about all the different techniques. And if you take all the deep state tactics that are used to herd you and herd me and herd everybody, you know, they fall into three baskets. The first I call surveillance and mind control. So you have, you know, digital systems that are basically invisible to the naked eye for the most part. And basically they're tracking everything you're doing, everything you're saying. Some people say they're tracking everything you're thinking. And, you know, but they also can deliver mind control. They can deliver entrainment. They can deliver supplemental programming. They can deliver, you know, people who call you up and scare you and threaten you. But anyway, so there's a one-way mirror and a two-way street in terms of operations. Mm-hmm. So that's number one. Number two, there is a fantastically sophisticated and complex system of financial nuts and bolts. A guy loses his job. The next day, the drug dealer is at his door. And the next day, he gets a credit card from Chase with a 30% interest rate and a $50 upfront fee if he exercises it, which he's going to do because he needs to buy food for his kids, right? Mm-hmm. Right. That's called relational database marketing.
Yeah.
Right? So they're working him just like they're working every family in the neighborhood. Anyway, and one of the stories I always tell is about the teacher who quit because all the parents wanted her to say that their kids were ADHD so that they could get Social Security disability, and they needed Social Security disability to feed the kid. But it meant they had to put the kid on drugs, and she wouldn't sign off on it. So she was always getting into fights, including with the school, because the school gets a kickback, right?
Right. Yes.
Right. So there's this very complex incentive system designed to basically drug the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And, you know, and incentivizing parents and teachers and schools and everybody to engineer this. And, you know, we saw what the schools were paid fantastic amounts of money during COVID to do this and that. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're basically, the federal government is paying schools to destroy your children. That's mm-hmm. how it works. Okay. So you have this fantastically complex nuts and bolts. And the amazing thing about people in America is it's amazing how smart they are, because they don't know exactly how the system works, but what they know is there are no secrets and you can't fight City Hall. And if you try, you know, the next thing you know, you're going to get fired. You're not going to get the promotion. You're going to get detailed to Alaska. I mean, that's what they used to do at HUD. And, you know, the secretary would call me in, and he learned pretty soon, quickly, that the only way it could kind of get to me was hurt one of my people. Mm-hmm. You know, so if I didn't really make him happy, you know, one of my favorite people was going to get detailed to Alaska. You know, so if you have a home and a family and two kids in school, you know, and you have to come home and say, we're going on tundra patrol, you know, it's pretty miserable. Okay. So, but it's fantastically complex and like the surveillance and the entrainment, it works off of AI and software. The third one, of course, is covert operations. So not mm-hmm. everybody will play ball. And so you got to get a control file on them. If you can't get a control file on them, you got to scare them in a variety of different ways, or poison them or kill them. You know, poison them, they're disabled. They, you know, I remember one time I had to stay in bed for 6 months. And, you know, and so someone in business was hoping I couldn't perform. Now I was able to do it anyway. To mm-hmm. his great disappointment, but we'll talk about your neighbors later. Anyway, so
I'm sure you're tuning in back there.
Oh, really? Oh, well. You can always hope. We can always, you know, maybe the time has come to try a win-win model. Okay, yeah. So you have the financial nuts and bolts. You have the covert operation. Now, here's the important thing to understand. So you have these three lines: surveillance, you know, the two-way operations and the one-way mirror, the financial incentives, the nuts and bolts, carrots and sticks, and it's very granular. And then the third is the covert operations. They all work together.
Right.
So when I was dealing with litigation, I was dealing with all three plus the legal and financial harassment, you know, and I'm dealing with all of them all the time. Mm-hmm. And remember, they can run these with AI and software. So the big excuse I hear from everybody is, oh, I'm too unimportant. They would never bother with me. Wrong. There are 325 million targeted people in America, and they divide up in two groups, those who know they're a target and those who don't. It's that simple. You know, the AI, the variable cost of tracking and operating the control system, the control grid, is zero. Because with AI and software, you got 325 million Americans. The incremental cost of adding one is zero.
Right.
Right? So, yeah. Right. And the taxpayer's paying for most of your expenses. Right? Mm-hmm. So the people you're controlling are and managing and manipulating and hurting and influencing, you know, they're paying you to do this.
You've got unlimited tools to surveil them as well.
Right. 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 Not to mention, you know, if they don't pay enough in taxes, you can always just issue treasuries and steal the money, right?
Yeah. I have a big thing here about a tax revolt coming up for later, but please continue.
Well, taxation is where the rubber's going to meet the road, because yes. Taxation without representation, you know, that's where the cash flow meets the policy.
You did a fantastic report on that.
Oh, I'm so glad. I want to talk with you about that, because that one was, you know, there are things that are hard to write and then there are things that are almost impossible. And that was one of them.
Exactly.
Anyway, it's like trying to get a bear in a test tube.
Right. That's one of the ultimate ones, too, because we know it's the ultimate third rail in a sense, because as soon as you turn that thing, you become the ultimate target.
Right. So you got these three lines of control. They're very sophisticated. They're very expensive, and they've been evolving for centuries. You know, this is not new. Getting a control file on somebody is not new. The church with a confession booth in your local area used to do it, but that was much more labor intensive. Now they can do it with telecommunications, and that's why the churches are getting shut down and going bankrupt, because they don't need them anymore, right? You know, so that's why the local boys are getting rolled. You can centralize these tactics. Anyway, so when people say, I'm not important, wrong. You're very important. Because if you look where most of the money comes from, it comes from the political control you get one county at a time. And that means, you know, everybody, you can harvest everybody and everything. Now, why is it so important to me that every person listening to this can see the control grid that's operating on you? Because when you add CBDCs and digital IDs, bam, that control grid goes from something that is hurting you and me and influencing you and me and tricking you and me to a digital concentration camp.
Right.
We go from being herded to being under total and complete control, to slavery.
That's a huge difference.
It's a huge difference. And there's one way to stop that from happening, and that's to back out of the control grid now. And that's why it's so important you see the control grid, because if I can see it in my life, you know, today, now, how it's impacting me, how it's influencing me, I can start to withdraw. I can start to protect myself. I can start to do things. You know, if I know that entrainment is, you know, on this digital equipment, if I make an important financial decision, I can turn it off, go out, sit under a tree, sleep on it, think on it, and make a decision where I'm not, you know, in the glow.
Exactly.
Right. So it makes a huge difference just knowing the stuff exists and how it operates. Anyway,
Jeff, I want to ask you there, because you mentioned it as a kind of a timetable, while we're still in this window, how big do you think that window is? How long is this period of the window that we're in?
6 to 18 months.
That's pretty short.
It's short. We're in a very short window. So this is why it's so important to back out now. The more people, you know, we started with Cash Friday. Now we're doing cash every day.
Excellent.
So I don't know. Have you seen, we put up a new, you saw the Carson's video of the head of BIS saying, we control everything.
All over the place. Yeah.
Have you seen the new one that we put up of Richard Warner saying they want to chip us?
Yes.
Okay, so that's at the time. If you click on cash, because we've changed the title from Cash Friday to Cash Every Day.
Excellent.
But if you go to the Federal Reserve System has a research shop out in the St. Louis Fed called Fred, and they do very good graphs and charts of the economy. And if you look at the one for currency and circulation, ever since the pandemic started, it looks like a rocket.
Wow.
No, people don't trust the system.
Yeah.
You know, they know, and cash is going like this.
Excellent.
Now, you would think with inflation that they wouldn't want, you know, you wouldn't want to hold paper money and inflate wrong. They know inflation is not the problem. Politics is the problem here.
Right.
Right.
Right. And it's degenerating the money that they have as well. So, you know, they've accumulated a certain amount of money, and now the actual value of that money is being lowered.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. There's a break there too, because people start to realize, oh, I'm getting screwed on the COVID side. There are all these things coming in on the financial side. There are all these things coming in. There's at some point, it seems to me, you know, a kind of 100th monkey thing occurs and everybody catches on, and they're trying to compensate before that happens. Go ahead.
So we used to make posters. If you go to missingmoney.salieri.com, there's one poster I love.
Yeah.
We called it Constant Amazement. So there's a picture of a African-American accountant. He's clearly an entrepreneur and accountant. And he says, so Powell, in his testimony, talked about starting a Department of Reconciliation that would compensate people for the cost of slavery to their family, the yes. old slave trade. So he's this very sort of spiffy, smart, African-American looking CPA. And here's what it says. I'll send you the link. It says, here's my bill for your proposed Department of Reconciliation. $260,000, which is $65,000 per person, missing money for a family of four. $240,000, equity and income destroyed by declaring my business non-essential. $300,000, residential and business properties harmed by looting and arson and riots, loss of insurance. $200,000, destruction of appraised property value from defunding of police. $1 million total to date. Forget the 18th century. Fix today's problems. From a Minneapolis CPA taxpayer, business and homeowner, and father of two.
Fantastic.
Oh, you should see these. We have.
Yeah, I've seen some. They're fantastic.
Yeah, there are fast. Dear Mr. Gates, why don't you eat this hormone-infested bio-warfare burger yourself and use your Jedi contract and Windows backdoors to get back our $21 trillion? Sincerely yours, a man who wants to stay a man. Anyway, they go on and on. They're pretty funny. I'll put the link here.
Excellent.
In the chat bot.
You know, since we're doing a little where are we now theme with this, where are we now with the missing trillions?
You know, what happened was we were missing $21 trillion as of 2015, the end of 2015 fiscal year. Mm-hmm. And when the Skidmore survey came out in 2017 on not the COVID survey, the survey on the missing money, and documented that at the time when the $21 trillion of outstanding debt, that $21 trillion was missing, the Department of Defense swore that they were going to do an audit. They tried to do an audit, announced, you know, that it wasn't successful. And then they adopted FASB 56, which is an administrative policy that says, essentially, we don't have to obey the Constitution and the financial management laws and regulations. And we're going to dictate that by administrative policy. It's an inversion. So if the highest law is the Constitution, and then under the Constitution, you have financial management laws, and then you have financial management regulation. The fourth thing is administrative policy. So they created an administrative policy that said, oh, secretly, we don't have to obey any of that, you know.
Amazing.
Which, you know, if you go to missingmoney.salieri.com, you can find the article I wrote with my attorney, Caveat Emptor, about the fact, what does this mean to institutional investors? Mm-hmm. And what it means is that not only the U.S. government securities, but all the banks and defense contractors that do a lot of business with the federal government, if you read all the details, their disclosure, as far as I can tell, means nothing. You know, there's no disclosure in the U.S. securities market. I shouldn't say no. If I pick up someone who's subject to the National Security Director waiver of SEC provisions or even FASB 56, I have no idea what their financials mean.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. It's a complete betrayal of that system, really.
Well, what they said when they adopted it is we would have to basically recuse the entire budget unless we do this.
Amazing.
Well, it was kind of honest. I don't think they expected it to get, you know, because it was adopted the week of the Kavanaugh hearings.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody noticed. And I don't think they expected it. I don't think they expected it to get as much attention as it got. Anyway, a subsequent report came out saying that there were 91 trillion of adjustments, but that's a meaningless figure because you don't know how many have documentation and you don't. So I've just kept to the 21 trillion. But once with FASB 56, the audit, even if they could achieve an audit, it's meaningless.
Right.
As far as I can tell. So,
absolutely.
You know, so we've now had, you know, the financial coup is completely busted through. And now I would say, you know, whatever's going on, it's completely out of the control of the U.S. Congress and the U.S. citizens, which is why taxation then becomes a very big issue.
Absolutely. Right. Do you feel that the public, it's taking too long for the public to catch on, that in fact, even with the censorship, there's enough of this material out there? And that the public is still lagging in their catching up to all this.
So, you know, I think you have two things going on. The first is entrainment. So, mm-hmm. you know, put that aside. For the population that's less susceptible to entrainment or is sort of broken through it, I think the question for most of them is how? How do I do something about this?
Right.
And one of the reasons we've written all the wrap-ups we've written is to help people start to grapple with it. Because if you, it can seem overwhelming, yeah. and it's important to get it framed and organized and into a place where people can start to discuss their options.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there are plenty of ways to deal with this.
Yeah.
You know, so let me give you a sense of my perspective. When I first got to Tennessee, I went with one of my cousins and we found the original homestead. And the original homestead, you know, everybody was leaving the East Coast to get away from the Civil War, you know, right. and they kept trying to go west to miss it. Anyway, a family of 10, two parents, eight kids, arrive in Tennessee right before the winter. They build a log cabin, no windows, dirt floor, and live in it with no heating, no running water for the winter. Right?
Yeah.
Right. And I remember looking at that and, you know, the big issue was I was going to lose all healthcare insurance. And I realized, you know, my ancestors have been on this planet for thousands of years with no healthcare insurance.
Yeah.
You know, and they did okay. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you look at what we've accomplished over the last 200 years, you know, we've accomplished some pretty amazing things. So if my ancestors can live in a log cabin for, you know, with no, you know, they, luckily, I mean, they had a fireplace, thank God. But, you know, basically with a fireplace for heat and huddling together, you know, to survive, think about, you know, it's, we've been very spoiled. We've been very privileged.
Of course.
And, you know, yeah, but if the privilege walks out the door, you know, we're made of sterner stuff.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right. Yeah. So I used to have a client that say, it's time to put on your big boy pants. Anyway, so, you know, here's the funny kind of thing. If you look at the key people who have to act on many of these issues, it's going to be the state governments in the United States,
mm-hmm.
you know, and some states have great state government. They've got good legislators. They've got good operational bureaucracies. And they're being squeezed between the federal government trying to harvest and destroy their local economies and the citizens who want to be productive.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at the people who voted for Trump, they didn't vote for Trump because they wanted a New York casino executive to be their president. They voted for Trump because they wanted to be productive.
Yeah.
And they wanted to get the things destroying their productivity out of their lives.
Yes.
And they were hoping Trump might do that. And, you know, he did do some of those things. He got us out of the WHO. If we had gotten out and stayed out of the WHO, we would be much better off.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, so they're looking for somebody who could talk the language of productivity. And that's what they still want. They still want stable governance. They still want the rule of law. And they still want a financial system that will allow them to transact and do their business, you know, without incredible amount of corruption and trickery and invasive surveillance and compromise of their privacy and stealing of their business.
Yeah.
So they're just looking. And if you look at what their beef is, If you listen to the Russians and the Chinese, it's the same beef. They're tired of the scorpion. You know, the scorpion, the story of the frog and the scorpion?
Yes. Right.
They're tired of getting stung in the middle of the river.
Yeah.
They want to be productive. And they need a financial system that will allow them to trade without, you know, serving. You know, the U.S. crossed the line in 2014. They decided the dollar was a political control mechanism, not a currency.
Amazing.
And they tied it with financial sanctions. I reviewed one of the first books by a guy who'd helped develop a lot of the financial sanctions, wrote a book review, and I basically said, you know, if you look at what gives the dollar its power, you know, this is going to keep their game going for a while, but it's going to kill the goose that laid the golden egg, and that's exactly what's happening.
Wow, fascinating.
So when the money was fiddled with by the truckers,
mm-hmm.
you know, that was the bell, and that bell rang around the world. To a certain extent, the bail-in of Cyprus deposits did it, but not the way that the truckers did it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And Trudeau pressed that emergency button almost immediately, showing that I have this thing when I see emergency powers floated. You know, one of the Bilderberg, they just had the conference for Bilderberg, and of course the Davos crowd had their conference. But right. in Bilderberg, one of the top things that they had there was actually number 7 on the agenda was continuity of government and the economy.
Right, and bail-ins are going to be part of the continuity of government play.
So let's talk about that just for a moment, because, you know, between Professor Peter Del Scott's work, what they built COG for originally, and then what it's being used for now, they have an incredible infrastructure around this. And it can only operate under emergency powers. And it seems like the only way that these people can govern is through emergency powers, because they don't have right. the actual political popularity to do it.
Well, there are two games in town. One is emergency, and the other is experts. Because in an emergency, you have to do what the experts say. So if the experts say, you know, camels can fly, you have to pretend that that is so. It's like, suddenly, you know, so under emergencies, experts are the law.
Exactly.
There is no law. It's, you know, it's the rule of experts. Right.
Incredible, Catherine, just remarkable information and so timely. Now stay there and we'll do part 2. I want to look at the black budget UFO file hearings and how this plays with continuity of government. Part 2 will be available at darkjournalist.com shortly. Be sure to be a member now. Of course, Catherine's amazing work and the new report on taxation available at Solari.com. Some of the best information available anywhere, and Catherine's work is like nothing else. Join us on Fridays at 8 p.m. Eastern for the X Series. See you soon.